The Tom Woods Show, episode 1243.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, don't forget my friend Bob Murphy has an amazing new book where he takes all his critiques of Paul Krugman from over the years, all these devastating smashes, and organizes them in one volume according to topic. And these are topics you want to master, and Bob will help make you the master of the universe. Check it out at ContraKrugmanBook.com, and I am the narrator of the audiobook version, and you can get that for free when you check out the Audible offer at TomWoodsAudio.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. The topic of the universal basic income just seems to be all over the place, and more people are jumping on board with this idea. Even some people in the libertarian world say that it would be an improvement from what we have now, and I've talked about this on the show once before. Maybe it's come up here and there, but I did devote one episode to it with Matt Zwolinski. But today we're joined by our old friend Anthony Samaroff, and Anthony has a brand new book called Universal Basic Income, For and Against. We're going to get into the details there. He, of course, is co-host of the Scottish Liberty podcast, which you just have to listen to and love. And he's just one of my favorite libertarians around today. So I'm delighted to welcome him and to have a chance to talk to him about what's in his book. Anthony, welcome back.
Thank you. Delighted.
I'm so glad you're out there still doing your thing. We've got this wonderful book of yours, Universal Basic Income, For and Against.
Right.
And it's not a debate book. You haven't brought anybody alongside you to give the for. You are laying out what you consider to be the strongest arguments in favor of the universal basic income. And some of them may even seem weirdly tempting to some brands of libertarian. There's an efficiency argument that's being made and that kind of thing. And that then you go on and address all of them in your against section,
right,
which, let's face it, is the vast bulk of the presentation. So can we start by having you explain exactly what people who favor the universal basic income or the basic income guarantee have in mind exactly? They're not saying that all poor people should get X dollars. They're by and large just saying absolutely everybody should get X dollars, either in the form of a check or as some kind of a tax deduction. So how exactly does it work?
Well, the simplest form would be that you'd get $1,000 or whatever in your bank account every month from the government. There's more confusing varieties of it, where if you're earning a lot, you'd get it as a tax deduction. And if you were somewhere in between, you'd get some of it as a tax deduction and some of it as a lump sum. And the idea of this is that the current welfare system has these welfare cliffs, where if you earn over a certain amount, you lose certain benefits. And when we factor in subsidies for some healthcare services and other things which the government might provide, that might actually be tantamount to you earning less, or you walking away with less in your pocket, even if you're working more. And that was one of the efficiency arguments that you alluded to. The efficiency argument is that this would be simpler to administrate, so you'd be able to get rid of the government bureaucracy. But the main point is, at least from the conservative side, people like Charles Murray, that this would remove the disincentive to work, because you'd be receiving your universal basic income no matter what, and the rug is not going to be pulled out from you. You're not going to be stuck in a poverty trap.
All right. So that's the kind of argument. And then, of course, there's the argument. There are many arguments for. There's an argument that is derived from the problem of automation, the so-called problem of automation. You have a special section,
right,
where you take that on. But that's the one that we hear the most, actually, I think, these days is, I guess you do hear something from the argument from inequality, and that this would help people. It would maybe help try and deal with that problem and help people in the lower rungs of the ladder. But primarily what I hear is the robots are coming. People can't compete with robots. Robots don't take breaks. They don't go to the bathroom. They don't take vacations. How are people going to compete with them? Answer, they won't. So therefore, we're going to have to give everybody a basic income guarantee. So that, I think those are the most commonly heard arguments, unless I'm just not plugged in enough to this.
Yes, I did a very extensive treatment of the automation argument because we come up against it time and time again. And there's so many ways to hit that point. I won't give them all away, but it's really interesting how on one hand, we're constantly told that classroom sizes are too big and that we don't have the capacity to cope with healthcare services, there's long waiting lists and so forth and what have you. And yet at the same time, we're told that the robots are coming and there's no jobs. Well, I mean, you can't have both at the same time. I think Murray Rothbard had this argument which said, well, you know, at the point where you just imagine a Coke and it appears in your mouth, then yeah, well, maybe we've reached utopia at that point and economics becomes irrelevant. But until then, there's all sorts of work that we'd like to have done for us, whether it's have someone else mow our lawn or cook our dinners, or we hear that there's too many old people who are left on their own with no social contact and what have you. I think as automation progresses, the price of goods will come down further and further. So people will actually have to work less. In a way, automation is a basic income. I talk about how the market actually distributes the benefits of automation. For example, if I adopt a machine and my unit cost of production goes down, if I don't lower my prices, someone else will take advantage of the technology and lower their prices. I go into far more detail in the book, but at least I think we're a little while away from utopia yet, and I'm actually quite optimistic as to what automation is going to do for society. As you'll discover, it is quite an optimistic and uplifting book, I would say.
Well, you make arguments that are somewhat different from what I expect to encounter in a book like this. And that's not saying they're wrong, but I wouldn't have thought of them and as they're not what I expect. So, for example, what you spend a lot of your time doing is showing how a lot of the basic necessities, as well as higher ticket items like education and healthcare, have been made artificially more costly by government intervention of various sorts. And then you go and catalog these various government interventions, and you more or less say, look, if we stopped shooting ourselves in the foot from the beginning, we probably wouldn't even be in a position where we would feel like this whole debate was even necessary to begin with. So you should read Anthony's book for the whole argument, but walk us through that kind of thinking.
I really appreciate you bringing that up, because that is the point of the book. This book is a bait and switch. It's a Trojan horse. It's aimed at the left because they're the ones talking about it. And as a person that was formerly on the left, well, the left expressed concern for the least well-off above us, the disadvantaged, the economically disadvantaged, let's say. So the whole idea of the book, as I say, pretty close to the beginning of the book, even if you do want a universal basic income, once I've outlined the arguments against it, it's far too expensive. Look at the figures. We can't afford it. So if you do want a universal basic income, here's a bunch of other stuff we'd have to sort out first. I demonstrate how the government has increased the price of accommodation, how the central banking devalues the currency, how regulations make products and services more expensive, how we can't import goods from the most impoverished countries in the world. And I talk about the effect of that, of how much cheaper the cost of living would be if, as you put it, we stopped shooting ourselves in the foot. And the idea of that is to basically educate people who are educated enough to be interested in something like the UBI on a bunch of libertarian policies that would basically raise everyone's standards of living, because you can't unhear something. And I can't imagine people not walking away from that going, yeah, that is true. I mean, Anthony's right. The government really has increased the price of accommodation, as demonstrated by the book. So this is one, like, the book is on Amazon Kindle, but if you want to get a free ebook, you can download it from my website. I'll tell you the links at the end. Please, by all means, email out a copy to any of your lefty friends who are into the universal basic income, or if you get in a debate with someone on Facebook, or even your Zwolinskian libertarian friends who think that the universal basic income might be a more efficient system to our present welfare system.
Have you been following the different so-called experiments with universal basic income in various locations? And can you report anything on any of that?
Yeah, I appreciate you mentioning that. It is in the I do address that in the Q&A section of the book. There's a third of the book that's given over to answering objections to my arguments. And someone said on YouTube, what about these experiments in universal basic income that have been done? You say that it won't work, but you're just theorizing. What about the empirical evidence? The problem with those things is there's two main problems with them. The first one is that the money to fund the universal basic income in these experiments is coming from out of the demographic that's benefiting from it. So if I went round to my neighbor's house and grabbed one item from each of my neighbors every month, and we just monitored what was going on in the Samaroff household, you'd soon see that my experience of life was becoming more lavish. But at the same time, all of my neighbors are becoming poorer. And that's obviously cannot be factored into the experiment, the fact that the money's been sucked out from somewhere else. Because supposing we instituted it here or in the USA, you'd be taxing the same demographic to pay for the universal basic income that would be receiving it. The other problem with those experiments is that the people who are on the receiving end of the handout know that it's going to be time limited. So we would make much better, wiser decisions if we knew that we were only going to be receiving this money for 6 months or a year or two. We might invest in a business. But if we knew it was going to be coming indefinitely, we think, well, do you know what? I can always start that project next month. This month, I want to party a bit more. Or I'd like to go on another holiday, or maybe I'll just take a drive down to see my parents. Or, you know, there's not the same time pressure if we instituted a basic income as a permanent fixture as in these experiments.
Now, one of the arguments that I thought I would see more of, although it is in your book, but has to do with the question of cost. And I know the thing is this bores people, and that's
right.
Plus also people think, one way or another, you know, we always seem to, at least in the US, people will say, we always seem to find money to bomb places. So I'm sure we could find money to do this. So when you give people dollar amounts, it just doesn't seem to phase them. But yet, when I discussed this question with Matt Swilinski, whom you referred to before, in an episode hundreds of episodes ago, I did raise it. And it turns out that the cost we're talking about is astronomical. It's much, much higher than any of them are frankly honest enough to admit to. So I would like to hear from you a little something about that. Now, obviously, you're in Scotland.
Yes.
So, you know, you have a different situation, but all the same, is there some way you can give us a sense of, even given that there are probably numerous competing proposals, the kind of scope we're looking at here?
Right. Yes. I mean, in this country, and it's probably not too different in the States, and I took a very conservative figure. I mean, some advocates are suggesting a lot more money than I did would be far, far in excess of total government spending at the moment just to fund the UBI. Now, if you were to subtract the total amount of money spent on welfare programs, that only really tantamounts to maybe a third or less of the total cost of the universal basic income. So you're not really, there's no way to do this. And that was my excuse to talk about all the ways that the government makes our life more expensive. And if we cut back on government intervention in the economy, the cost of living will go down. Because I could say, even if you did want a universal basic income, you'd have to first bring down the cost of living significantly. And here's some ways you could do it. And on that point, I feel like people would get, even if they were not libertarian minded, if they were to read the book, they feel like they left after reading the book getting a real decent grounding on economics, because I do talk about quite a lot of issues surrounding that idea of lowering the cost of living, which, as you say, the cost of a universal basic income would be absolutely astronomical at the moment. It would be necessary to first institute shrinking the role of government in the economy in order to make it in any way affordable. Even then, I have my doubts.
All right. Now, Anthony, your book is nice and short, easily digestible, but let me take a moment to talk about a way my listeners can cope with the fact that we all have way, way, way more books than we can possibly read, even though we feel absolutely compelled to read them all. Blinkist solves this problem. Blinkist is the only app that takes thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to the most important elements, so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes, all on your phone. With Blinkist, you'll expand your knowledge and learn more in just 15 minutes than you can in almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere. I like to listen to Blinkist while I'm out driving because I'm always taking the kids one place or another. The Blinkist library is massive, from timeless classics like Think and Grow Rich to current bestsellers like Skin in the Game. 5 million people are using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. Time for you to join them. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/woods to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/woods to start your free 7-day trial. You can cancel anytime. Blinkist.com/woods. All right, here's what I want to know, though. Why does it have to be a universal basic income in that every single human being gets this income? The way I always imagined it before people came up with these formal proposals was that what people were saying was that nobody should ever fall below, I don't know, let's just say $20,000 a year, just at random. Okay.
Right.
Nobody should fall below that. And if they do fall below that, then the government will pay them an amount that adds them up to at least $20,000. So there's some limit below which people cannot fall. But it never occurred to me that we'd be saying, give everybody a check for $20,000.
Right.
Which sounds more like what this proposal is. Why is it that proposal? I mean, why don't we just say, if we're trying to help the poor, let's go ahead and do it?
Because there's many reasons for that. One is trying to combat the perception that the poor are just parasites sucking off the teat of the state. Now everyone's receiving equal treatment. So that's one thing. And it's also to enfranchise people. Oh, we're all citizens now. We're all part of this society. And the society cares for us all, regardless of what tier we're in, regardless of whether we're a man or woman. Women do a lot more of the voluntary work and so forth. So we're bringing everyone in. We're living in a village. You know, we're all part of this society. We're all receiving equal treatment. Actually, it's one of my arguments, because it's one of the things that I really doubt would last for very long, because what you're going to have is people are going to say, well, you know, I'm a single mother, I should get more of a universal basic income. I'm disabled, I should get more. I live in an expensive area, I should get more, and on and on and on. And before we know it, we'll be back to the bureaucratic nightmare we were in the first place. So it's more of argument from a utopian vision of what our relationship as individuals should be to society. And of course, they say society, we say to government.
All right. So now let's just do kind of like a lightning round of bullet points here. What you consider to be the primary drawbacks of universal basic income? Because part of your argument, as I said, has been that one way that we could solve some of these problems would be, first of all, to avoid all the self-inflicted wounds of government programs that make things more expensive or that retard our prosperity, make it occur more slowly. All right, I agree. We want to do all those things. But that's just a way of saying, here's how I could kind of nudge you in the direction you want to go using a different means. But suppose they say, well, that's all nice and well and good, but we still want to do our thing anyway. What are the worst problems that could arise from it?
Well, it's non-discriminatory. If you give a handout to someone who's a video game addict or a gambler or is just generally irresponsible with money, then you're making their life worse, not better. And the other thing is, that's obviously at the expense of someone who could actually be putting it towards productive use. The word opportunity cost does not exist in the lexicon of the left. They don't realize that whenever you're funding someone, it's at the expense of someone else, and that the market has mechanisms for ensuring that those resources are well spent. So in those cases, you know, in a situation where the third sector had to provide for the disadvantaged, they'd be able to look people in the eye and see what their real problems were and hopefully refer them to the right kind of help. That simply would not be solved by this problem. You give a basic income to an alcoholic, you're making their life worse. You're not making it better. So I'd say that's one of the worst ones.
I think that's a hard sell for a lot of people. I think they would not find that convincing. I mean, yes, they would. Yes, obviously, if you keep throwing alcohol at an alcoholic, they say that's not doing him any favors. But they would say that most of the people they're trying to help are there through no fault of their own. Now, you can argue about whether alcoholism is a disease,
sure,
and whether there's willpower involved. But the worldview of the left, when it looks at the economy, is that people are pawns in the hands of large institutions and forces that are beyond their control. And so no matter how hard they run on that hamster wheel, they can't ever make progress. And for you to come along and say that giving them money is just going to confirm them in their bad decisions is moralizing on your part, and to heck with you.
Right.
I think that is what they would say.
Okay. Well, it's absolutely not moralizing in my part because, you know, I am actually deeply concerned for that demographic. You know, I'm a counselor that's what I do for a profession, but I'm perfectly willing to accept that some people will throw that out at me. I mean, the only thing I can do is give other examples of drawbacks that I think are meaningful. I mean, I think there's a good chance that people just end up trading with Bitcoin or euros or dollars if we introduced it here, because the money isn't backed by anyone's labor. Therefore, it's not really worth anything anymore. And then how's this for, security? The amount of people who end up being dependent on the universal basic income, which can be taken out from under them at any time, then the wrong government comes in along. What a precarious position you are if you have the wrong political positions or you get into trouble. They'll just say, here's our new way of policing everyone and keeping them in line. We'll just cancel their universal basic income. Next thing you know, you're dispossessed. You don't even have the skills to get a job because you've been paid not to develop those skills for a while. So it sounds like the plot of a dystopian science fiction novel. I think someone should write it, actually, where the government weaponizes the universal basic income to crack down on political dissidents.
Do all of these plans from various people envision UBI replacing the existing social safety net? Or did some of them imagine it as a supplement to it?
There will be sectors that imagine it as a supplement. And some people have been, you know, you have a certain demographic of people who even say, you need to be careful with the UBI because once we bring it in, they'll say, you don't need a minimum wage anymore. You don't need these labor laws, which is exactly the kind of argument that the more conservative or libertarian advocates make for it. Well, if you have a universal basic income, then we'll be able to get the minimum wage. Of course, it never works out like that. As Milton Friedman put it, there's nothing so permanent as a temporary government program. And I very much doubt we'll end up with less intervention in the economy as a consequence of this existing than more.
Couple things I want to add about the book as we begin to wrap up. First thing is, has a foreword by Bob Murphy, who is very well known to listeners of this program. And that's no small thing, because Bob is one of the busiest people I know. And the fact that he made time to do this means that he feels strongly about what you're arguing here. The other thing is, it's maybe useful for people to know a bit about your own background, because you do come from libertarianism, from a more left-wing background. And the kind of language and arguments that you're using in this book are arguments that you yourself say might have been likely to resonate with you at that time, not to the point where you would have read the book and instantly have been a convert, but it would have started to gnaw at you.
Yeah, from my perspective, this book was a necessary addition to the libertarian canon, if I can say that at the risk of sounding conceited. But I would have benefited from someone putting this in my hands, you know, 2007, around Ron Paul time. And I think if people download it, there is a free version to be downloaded, they'll feel similarly. I think they'll feel like this is good ammunition for winning the war of ideas. At least I think it's a necessary addition. So I'd like to actually get your feedback at home, you know, have a read of it. Probably only takes 2 or 3 hours, and send me an email to let me know what you thought of it. Send it to your left-wing friends. Send it to other libertarians, get some copy and paste material for when you're banging your head against the wall debating people on Facebook. And on the point on Bob Murphy, yeah, I was really thankful to Bob for writing the foreword. We had a little email exchange. He gave me feedback on the text, some of it, which was really, really useful. And it was edifying to me as someone who didn't do a PhD or study an undergrad in economics, but just came to it as a hobbyist, that someone like Bob Murphy, someone of that caliber, could go through it and point out a couple of fallacies, but generally think the book was economically sound. So I'm absolutely delighted with that.
Should I direct people to Amazon for the book, or do you have a preferred way for them to get it?
You can buy it on Amazon Kindle if you like, but I would suggest that you go to my website, beyourselfandloveit.com/UBI, and download the ebook, the PDF version for free one way or another, whether you buy it or not, because that will keep your sanity and you'll be able to send it around to other people and feel free to share it. You know, I kind of have it on Amazon because if people are searching for me, it gives me more credibility and maybe new people will find it through there. But my main concern is getting it to as many people as possible and seeing if we can change some minds. And I think this, I might find out that this book doesn't do it, you know, but I thought if any book could do it, if any book could get through to people on the economic left on libertarian approaches to helping the poor, it's this one. And if you want to know what those arguments are, I strongly suggest it's a fun read as well. I managed to sneak some humor in there as well. And you'll feel like you're listening to Anthony Samaroff, those of you who are familiar with my work, when you read it. So it's free. beyourselfandloveit.com/UBI. Please download a copy.
That is really, really tremendous. I'm going to link to it at tomwoods.com/1243. So that'll be a way you can get it. What a great service you've done for the world. That's wonderful.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, and I hope that people will just, if I'm to be honest, like I feel like I need all hands on deck for this one, guys. So if you've familiar with the Scottish Liberty podcast, or if you've enjoyed me in this show, download it and send it to someone. Send it to at least one or two people that you think might benefit from it and help get the word out. That would be absolutely delightful to me.
All right. Great, great, great. Well, definitely we'll want to do that. You can either go to beyourselfandloveit.com/UBI or just go to tomwoods.com/1243 and you'll see that link right there. Click on it, get your copy, send it around. Thanks to Anthony Samaroff and your cooperation. Well, you know, we could save this world yet. All right. Well, thanks so much for your great work, Anthony. We appreciate it.
Thank you once more. You've been so helpful. It's been a delight. And well, what else can I say other than hope to be back?
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. If you're a homeschooling parent and you feel like that curriculum you picked is really driving you nuts and you can't imagine going through a whole school year like that, it's not too late to just ditch it. It's a sunk cost, baby, and switch over to the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum. Plus, when you order it through me, you also get Liberty Classroom for free, and you get a free autographed book, and you get an extra course, and awesome bonuses. So check that out at ronpaulhomeschool.com. Tomorrow, oh boy, is it a good one tomorrow. I cannot tell you how good the episode is tomorrow. Absolutely great. You're just going to be standing up and cheering by the end. Michael Rechtenwald of NYU is coming back on the show. He's written a memoir of his academic life. And of course, he was the professor who had an anonymous Twitter account where he was commenting on social justice warrior stuff. Because even as a leftist, and he was a leftist his whole life, he just could not believe what he was seeing. And what happened to him as a result of that led to some real soul searching on his part. If everybody you know who agrees with your ideology is suddenly treating you like a pariah and they're all themselves acting like jerks, does this say something about the ideology? I mean, he had to really, really think hard about a lot of things. And it's a story I think you're going to enjoy hearing. And we're going to talk about a lot of controversial questions. So it's going to be plenty of fun. So definitely, if you're listening to this, but you haven't subscribed to the show, got to make sure you do that over at iTunes. tomwoods.com/iTunes will take you over there. That way you won't ever be in the terrible, awful, unthinkable situation of missing an episode of The Tom Woods Show, especially like tomorrow's number 1244. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.